Hello, hello, hello. It's the end of July. This is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated to Ring of Honor Wrestling. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I do written reports on weekly television as well as live events. I co-host this podcast. I contribute to the PW Torch Wednesday live cast, PWT Talks NXT. And along with my co-host Emily Fear, we both co-host the PW Torch VIP podcast, Elite Repeat, the first podcast dedicated exclusively to being the elite. Hello, Emily.
Hello, Harley. Hello, everyone out there. I hope everyone is having a wonderful end of their July, enjoying all the wonderful things that our late summer is bringing to us, including, if you are like myself, you are in the midst of G1 madness and maybe feeling just a tiny bit fatigued from it. But alas, who can complain when the wrestling gods are gifting us such marvelous treasure upon treasure of matches? So yeah, I'm Em. I co-host this podcast and Elite Repeat along with Harley. And you can find me on Twitter talking about mainly New Japan Pro Wrestling and ROH. But right now it's all about the New Japan thanks to the G1.
Well, we got a lot to talk about this week because, yeah, packed episode of TV. Usually the TV format is three matches and maybe one short backstage promo. And we got that this week. But we also got another long promo, another medium length promo, and a bunch of things highlighted for next week. Three matches announced for next week, which is kind of a bit unusual too. So, a lot to discuss there. We've got a new match announced for All In on September 1st. We've got a bunch of things, but Emily, you mentioned the G1 climax. What's new in the world of the G1? And follow-up question, is Kenny Omega going to win it again?
You know, so the last person to go into the G1 and to win, to go into the G1 as the IWGP current heavyweight champion and to win the G1 was Masahiro Chono. That was, I think, that it's been a while, in 2000, something like that. Someone can correct me out there. It's not typical. Champions enter the tournament every year. Typically, they do rather well, but they often do not go to the final and they rarely win the G1. Omega is as typical of Kenny, being extra in the way that he tends to be. He is currently undefeated. We are about to enter, as of August 1st, we'll be on a night 12 of the G1 out of 18 plus the final night, so 19 shows, basically. And he is at 10 points. He is undefeated. So those 10 points, he was able to defeat Naito, Goto, Tama Tonga in a disqualification, Juice Robinson, and his most recent victory over LIJ's Sonata. So he is the current front runner at B Block, but he is also the competitor in the entirety of G1 to have a perfect score as of this moment. Meanwhile, in A Block, so things are looking rather sunny for Mr. Omega. He is going into night 12, riding high, but he will be facing Zack Sabre Jr., a opponent that for him offers a unique counter challenge to the style that he is most adept at. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens coming away from that match. So in A Block, the story for our ROH friend Hangman Adam Page is a little different. But the storyline that they're building with Page has become really interesting. This is Page's first G1 after all. So he stands at 2 points after night 11, which was just today, as we record this, Monday, July 30th. When you'll hear this, it's, you know, in between nights 11 and 12. He lost his most recent match on night 11 to Jay White. This was their second singles match after their original matchup in March at Strong Style Evolved in Long Beach. That match was really, really good. It did get overshadowed quite a bit by the Golden Lovers Young Bucks match, along with a couple other matches that happened that night that were also pretty terrific. So it was nice to see them take on each other and the G1 and even step up their original game beyond what they had delivered back in March. It was a fantastic match, but did unfortunately leave Mr. Page with still only 2 points to his score. So at this point, he is mathematically eliminated from winning the tournament. They still compete. There's lots of competitors now who are technically mathematically eliminated, but he is the first among them. Which is a disappointment for those who've been following Hangman's story in the G1. But there's a silver lining to this, and that is they're clearly developing a story about putting Paige over in New Japan. It's been building for some time. He's gotten over in ROH to quite a degree, but in New Japan, it's taken a little bit longer. But the Japanese fans are rallying behind him like we haven't heard even prior. He did main event in one of the Dentaku nights back in May, but because he's been main eventing in matches now in the G1 and he's been getting such a push, he's really getting over with the fans despite not winning matches. They are also doing a really great job of talking him up post-matches in post-match promos from his competitors, who are saying a litany of like wonderful, beautiful, nice things, ranging from, you know, talking about how in awe they are of his abilities to Tanahashi, who's, you know, just has singled out Paige as someone who stands out from Bullet Club in a very noticeable and important way. So there's a lot of talk about Hangman Page, despite his losing record in the G1 so far. He is someone who has been noted to be watched by both audience members and by his competitors, which, you know, is building to a really good story for Page in the next 6 months of New Japan Pro Wrestling. So there's lots of other stuff to talk about with the G1, but that is your ROH-specific updates.
And that's why we haven't seen Paige in ROH in a while now. It's been maybe like a month or... yeah, probably since Best in the World when he faced Martinez was the last time we saw Paige in an ROH ring. And if you're wondering, that's why. He's off in Japan doing his thing.
Yeah, we're in the, you know, it's been 2 weeks now of G1 Madness, and it will not end until August 12th. So we are still got a halfway to go. It is awesome. But for those of you who are also in the midst of G1 frenzy, you know that it can be pretty exhausting getting up at 5 a.m. to watch these matches, to watch these events begin. Lot to keep track of every day. But luckily right now we had one event on July 30th. There's a travel day. And then on August 1st, there's another one. Then a streak of shows happen again. So it's a lot to keep track of, but you can, as always, follow it on PW Torch's written reports and the PW Torch VIP podcast, Lioncast. When they return, they'll be covering the first 10 nights of the G1, which will be very exciting.
And wrestling never stops. That seems to be the big thing. It's one thing after another, especially with so many companies and so much great wrestling happening in 2018. WWE is doing their second annual all-women's tournament, the Mae Young Classic. Last year, Kairi Sane, formerly known as Kairi Hojo in Stardom, won the whole thing. This year, it's filming in a couple weeks, and there's a lot of big-name women in this. We already know former Women of Honor competitor Deonna Purrazzo has been confirmed for the tournament, which makes sense because she's now in NXT and competing, well, not competing down there yet, but she's in NXT getting ready. Also had a couple other ROH related names announced for the Mae Young Classic this week. Madison Rayne was announced today, who we've seen on ROH a couple times this year. In fact, she is going to be on television in 2 weeks competing in a Four Corner Survival match against, who is it? Karen Q, Tennille Dashwood, and Kelly Klein, I believe?
Yes.
In a number one contenders match. So Madison Rayne, appearing on ROH, just appeared on Impact Wrestling recently, and she is going to be in the Mae Young Classic, along with one of the women she's facing in 2 weeks on ROH television, Karen Q.
Mm-hmm.
That's very intriguing.
Yeah, funny how that works.
I'll be very interested to see who both of those women end up paired up against in the first round.
Man, this Mae Young Classic is getting more and more stacked. I mean, in addition to all the talent that you have mentioned, we've got Mieko Satomura, the co-founder of the Sendai Girls Pro Wrestling League, and just like a current working Japanese women's wrestling legend has been added to the Mae Young Classic. Satomura just makes this even more of an event to watch, but it's so exciting to see women like Karen Q and Madison like get their due in this tournament.
And Io Shirai, and yeah, just Zia Brookside, who also is a stardom regular. That's where I know her from. So just, yeah, I'm very intrigued by this in a way that I am not at all intrigued by what's happening on Raw and SmackDown.
How does, did you watch the Mae Young Classic last year? How does this event happen? Is it a pay-per-view?
It's on the WWE Network, and it was a sort of like a limited series last year. So you got, it's been a full year, and so much happens in a year that my memory is a little failing me. But I want to say we had a series of episodes, and each episode had, I think like the first episode was the opening round, or like half of the opening round. The second episode was the other half, and the third episode was the semifinals. The fourth episode was the finals, so on like that. Or the finals are happening live at this all-women's pay-per-view WWE is doing called Evolution. We know that. Beyond that, it's not clear. They're taping in August, but we don't know when it's going to be available on the network yet. Probably September.
That is cool, though, that I had heard about Evolution, but I did not know that the final of Mae Young was going to happen at Evolution, and that makes a lot of sense. And is actually, that's a really cool way to tie these two entities together.
Yeah, because Mae Young, I mean, they're still being treated like, despite all these established big names in it, they're kind of being treated like the rookies in the WWE universe. Nobody from Raw or SmackDown is competing in the Mae Young Classic. It's all new signees or unsigned competitors to WWE. So as if that's not enough, as if the G1's not enough, as if ROH Death Before Dishonor isn't enough, there's also an event called All In happening.
Yeah!
September 1st. Chicago, Illinois. We got match number 4 today. I want to say this is the main event, because I swear the Young Bucks said previously that their match was going to be the main event, but
yes.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe.
No, you're not
confirmed?
Wrong. I can't say that it's confirmed. I can confirm that they said that at one point, that they were main eventing this event, that they were main eventing this show, but that could have changed. That can change, I suppose. But at least a month ago, maybe a little bit more than a month ago, I remember it. I just don't remember what the context was. I can't remember if it was within that that Talk is Jericho interview. I don't know if it was that where they said it, or if it was another interview, like an actual like written interview with them. I know that they said that they were going to main event All In.
Okay, because... Yeah, I haven't read anything about that since. I was skimming the Wikipedia article for All In today. I didn't see that mentioned or confirmed, but I mean, that's up in the air. All we do know for sure, though, that it's going to be a 6-man tag. The Young Bucks and Kota Ibushi versus Rey Mysterio, Phoenix, and Bandido from Pro Wrestling Guerrilla.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Mysterio and Phoenix teaming together is super cool, because that there Phoenix is, anybody who knows Phoenix, he's a young Mysterio in many, many ways.
Yeah, this is really, really exciting for me. I am catching up on things here and there. I definitely catch up on having just started like Lucha Underground and watching a lot more, trying to catch more and more Lucha wrestling. Phoenix is someone that like, you know, makes an impression right off the bat. And you're totally right by saying like a young Mysterio inspired, very clearly wears that. Bandido is in a similar vein as well. So I think these styles are going to work really well with obviously with the Young Bucks and the way that they wear their style, where they wear their mesh of, you know, where they bring in the Lucha elements to what they do. And to have Kota in the midst of all of this is just super intriguing. It's gonna be insane. I don't know any other word to describe it. I think this match is gonna be absolutely insane.
Six guys just, man, flying every which way. Yeah.
You'll have to, I mean, there's going to have to be, I'm going to be interested to know how this works streaming at home, because watching it live, of course, is a different experience. It's going to be hard enough to keep track of the bodies when we're all, you know, sitting there live dumbstruck, but I'm going to be interested to see how that works in whatever streaming methods that they decide on, because man, I hope that they get enough cameras, because that's going to be a lot of bodies flying around.
I'm supposed to do written play-by-play of this live as it's happening. God help me.
Oh, Harley, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to be using a lot of Everybody Went Everywhere and When the Dust Settled, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, there was a guy over on the left and a guy out of the ring and a couple guys flying about. And yeah, pin, done.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Salamonster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Salamonster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Salamonster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
But what, like, we only have four matches on the All-In card now, but each one so different from each other. This match, we've just mentioned what kind of match this is going to be, and it's going to be the complete opposite of Cody and Nick Aldis.
Oh, absolutely.
You might see Cody do a springboard move at one point, but beyond that, totally different style of match. And then comparing those two matches to Marty Scurll versus Okada, different match altogether there too. And then Janela and Hangman Page. Yeah, each one of those matches totally unique and different from each other.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point. And it makes you wonder, like, okay, so looking at the roster of those who have been announced but still don't have matches, it's like, so what does that mean for Kenny Omega? What does that mean for all the female talent that's been signed and still doesn't have
Madison
a match?
Rain again.
Yeah.
Chelsea Green, Tessa Blanchard. Then we've got Jay Lethal, the ROH champion. Kenny Omega, the New Japan champion. Pentagon Jr., MJF, SoCal Uncensored.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, now that you've mentioned them in like the same breath, like, are we headed to a Jay Lethal Kenny Omega match? Because champion versus champion?
I was thinking Lethal and Pentagon for some reason. I can really see that happening.
Yeah.
But who knows? Mystery opponent for Kenny? People on Twitter are like fantasy booking Omega versus Punk in the main event. I think CM Punk will be at All In. But I can't see him wrestling. That's not something you give away his first match in X number of years. That's something you build to for months.
I hate to be jaded, but I agree with you. I do think that he will make an appearance in some way. It just doesn't, it makes sense. It's completely reasonable. And he doesn't have to get in the ring to get an enormous pop amongst that crowd. I don't see him, actually getting in ring and wrestling. I wouldn't see that happening.
But the past couple of weeks, they've been announcing these new matches on Being the Elite, which generally drops around Monday. So maybe by the time we're recording our next episode of this, we'll have match number 5 to discuss. Presumably, it's got to be a women's match next. We've got 5 women announced so far.
Yeah, and that number also kind of throws me. Like, what are we going to see with women? I was really hoping that All In wouldn't do the big show thing of, like, having one women's match and that being done with. I was kind of hoping with the talent that they had announced that they might, have at least 2 women-featured matches. But, yeah.
We got 5 women.
Yeah.
And SoCal and Sensu don't have any opponents. Could we see a 6-person intergender match and then a women's singles match?
I mean, I would love that, of course. I would eat that up, but I'm going to guess that All In isn't all about that just yet.
You don't think they're going to have any intergender matches on All In?
I'm going to say no. I think that they aren't. I think they're going to probably play to what they think their biggest strengths are and their biggest draws are with their crowds.
All right. We'll find out soon enough, I guess. We're a month away.
Because, I mean, just to really briefly muse on this, if you think about the demographics going into this, how many, you know, big all-in people who, you know, are going to all-in are also like really big about intergender wrestling? If they are coming from ROH, even if they're coming from New Japan, they're not really getting all that much of it. Now, that it's true that there's a lot of indie stars that are featured in this event that do have, like, they come from promotions that do have intergender wrestling, or maybe these guys have even done intergender wrestling, but I feel like they're going to cater to the fan base. And I feel like the fan base for All In is still pretty, pretty classic in the sense of they like their men's wrestling and they like their women's wrestling. And I don't know that they're still all that interested in intergender matchups. I'm saying all of this and I want to be wrong. So hoping it'd be great if I was wrong.
See, I want to say, like, anybody who likes the Bucks, or, and if you're a fan of the Bucks, then you're probably a fan of Joey Ryan. And so you should be well acquainted with intergender wrestling, Joey and Candice and teams like that. The same fan that you described, I don't know if, are they a Nick Aldis kind of fan? You know, he doesn't have that sort of indie cred, does he? In the same way that the young high flyers do, or someone like a Bandido. I don't know. I really don't know, but we should move on, I guess.
Yeah.
In ROH news, because this is all ROH related news, which is why we're discussing it. But in direct ROH news, Global Wars Tour is returning November 7th to 11th. It's been announced for Maine, Massachusetts, Buffalo, New York, and my hometown of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Thankfully.
Yeah.
They came to Toronto in the spring. And the event sold out before I even knew about it. I know about this one. With Honor Club, I'm a member of Honor Club. I'd like to think I should be able to get tickets for this show. And if so, I'm very happy because it might very well be my last opportunity to see Christopher Daniels and Kazarian wrestle. It might be my last chance to see the Young Bucks wrestle before they sign with WWE. This, a lot's happening in November, potentially.
That's true. Yeah, so gotta get those tickets. I'm a little disappointed that they are going to these places. I feel like this roster is very similar to what they just did with the War of the Worlds tour. And I know that at least maybe even as recently as last fall, Global Wars came to my hometown. So I was really hoping to see them come back to Pittsburgh. But I know they just did the TV taping here in April. So, but whatever.
It is a repeat of the same, not exactly the same. They didn't come to Buffalo in the spring, but sort of a repeat of the same tour circuit in the same way that Honor Reunited is going to the same three UK cities.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly why that is, but I do know that I was reading this week that since Sinclair Broadcasting purchased ROH, their tour scheduling has really changed, and they kind of specifically hit markets where ROH airs on Sinclair stations in a way that they didn't before. So if you kind of feel like, oh, ROH doesn't come to like my state in the south all that much anymore, or doesn't really come out to the west coast, that might be why.
That's really interesting, and I'm kind of curious about that, because so I think that has some effect on crowd, certainly on attendance at the live events. I think it has effect on ROH's pool when they do come to these towns on occasion. I just rewatched some of the matches from last week's show in Nashville, and I did notice that the crowd was a little smaller than I might have assumed, and that the energy wasn't quite there for a lot of the show. Definitely for some specific matches, but for like compare it to a house show that you might have watched like out of, you know, Detroit or out of Chicago or et cetera. You definitely see a drop in attendance in smaller crowd sizes in like southern cities that they visit on occasion. I think this comes into effect a little bit when we're going to talk about the latest episode that was filmed in Fairfax, because I was a little surprised by this. I noticing it for the first real time. I was surprised by the lack of size of the crowd, and definitely surprised by the lack of like energy in that crowd.
You felt that about this week's episode?
I felt that. I've been feeling that way about this Fairfax crowd, yeah, because last week's episode was in Fairfax, although I think that the crowd was pretty hot from that because of the momentous, like, the four-way matchup. But I think that Sinclair, this strategy of, like, primarily focusing on cities where their, you know, market, where the show is airing on in their stations, is hurting some of their attendance in, like, the southern cities.
To be fair as well, this Fairfax crowd is following up on the TV tapings at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York. And that crowd was insane.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's kind of unfair to compare them. And I will also say, in full disclosure, I have been watching like an average of 3.5 hours of New Japan Pro Wrestling crowds, you know, every other day for the last 2 weeks. So pretty much everything is looking a little dead in comparison. I mean, Japanese crowds aren't known for like wildness, but they are really into these shows. But you're right, compared to the crowd at like the Hammerstein, like for those episodes, Fairfax really can't compare. That's not even fair.
And comparing a crowd watching Omega and Naito and Tanahashi versus a crowd watching Vinny Marcellia and Eli Isom.
I mean,
slightly different.
These are very polar opposites, but yes, your point's too. I mean, I'm going to guess that if the Fairfax crowd was encountering, you know, Kenny Omega versus Naito, like, we might get a bigger reaction out of them.
This week on television, main event was the six-man titles. It was, 2 weeks ago that Kenny King, Chucky T, and Eli Isom won a gauntlet match to earn the right to challenge for the six-man titles. At the time, I said that I really would have liked them to make this into a proper build, give them some enhancement wins, maybe some promos showing why Kenny King and Chucky T chose Eli Isom, the rookie, to be their partner, show them coming together as a unit. We didn't get that. Instead, the week after they won the title, the match was announced. It got postponed due to Dalton Castle and the four-way for the title, but regardless, we still ended up with the same effect. We went into this title match with the three guys, the Misfit team, getting their title shot without any real build or development between them earning the shot and getting the shot. And that kind of foreshadowed things for me. At that point, I had a strong feeling that they probably weren't going to win the titles here.
Yep, and they didn't. I think the biggest flaw about this was the missed opportunity. If you're going to do any kind of like fun twist with a rookie like Isom and put them in the spotlight, it does stand to reason that you might want to make more of it than just like kind of this fluke thing where these two far more established guys include him in their trio. I think you bring up a really good point about how, you know, it would have been nice to like have an idea of why Chucky T and Kenny King were working with Eli. Obviously, our roster is a little limited now by practicality sakes because there are people who are on the ROH roster who are not currently available for something like this. And of course, the six-man gauntlet was kind of this, you know, featured a couple of different hodgepodge teams. That being said, it would have been really interesting to have a little bit of story dedicated, a little bit of promo time dedicated to, you know, why this kid? Why, you know, how did this, you know, the most adorable puppy in the puppy pile finally get adopted by, or temporarily adopted anyway, by a tag team? Without that, the audience is left to just assume that this is a fluke and we're going to see this kind of quickly get dismissed. And that's kind of what has happened.
When they won the gauntlet, I actually thought there was a chance that they might win the titles because I feel like the Kingdom's days as champions were numbered anyway. But also it felt like there's not really anything happening with Kenny or with Chucky right now. So why not put the three of them together as a team, even if it's short lived? But then funnily enough, by the time the match actually started on this week's episode, there were stories for those guys. All of a sudden, Beretta's back. Presumably mm-hmm. him and Chucky are going to be back together as best friends in the tag division. And then Austin Aries suddenly reappears on commentary, and apparently him and Kenny King aren't done with each other. That was a surprise to me. I was fully believed that we'd seen the last of Aries in ROH, at least for the future.
Yeah, and I will be surprised if we see more of Aries coming up. I think my hunch is that, you know, so this was filmed the day after Best in the World. They still had a fair amount of people who were on hand from Best in the World to do matches for this TV taping, Kushida and the Oedo Tai women and Mayu Iwatani and Austin Aries. And I think this was a way to be able to feature Austin so quickly after Best in the World. But I will be kind of surprised if we keep seeing him pop up in a frequent amount because, you know, he's still champion in Impact and like he's still got a job to do over there. I think he was just on hand, but it does make things kind of confusing. Like what is his storyline? Like, is he like going to be popping in, hanging around, trying to get Kenny to go to the dark side? Is that the idea?
That was what it sounded like on commentary. He made a comment about look at Kenny King. He's got all this skill, all this charisma. He's the total package. So why isn't he a top guy here? Why isn't he world champion? Why isn't he in the main event scene? And kind of implied that the reason he isn't is because Kenny's too nice. He's not willing to do what he has to in order to win matches, in order to really climb up the card. So yeah, does Aries stick around and kind of further that, kind of try to nudge his old friend into being an a-hole like him? Or does he just plant the seed and then go back to Impact and it's up to Kenny for it to fester inside him, or for somebody else to kind of nudge Kenny further towards that line?
I mean, I like that idea. I definitely would love to see a bit more dynamic play with Kenny King, because I don't know. I think that Aries' point is an astutely observed one, as far as Kenny having a lot of the tools and resources in his package to make himself a star, but he's just not quite there yet. So I think it's a compelling idea of like, and a very classic wrestling trope of like a classic way that a face turns heel in that, you know, that frustration to that they failed to capitalize their, you know, what makes them a good face into making them an actual champion. That being said, I don't know where Aries plays a direct part in that, other than just kind of being this little like whisper in his ear before heading out the door. If we see more of Aries doing that, I would be kind of surprised.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
But it could definitely be beneficial for King. We're talking theoretically here, but if he were to give in to the dark side, become just... We've seen him as like a heel who showboats and who is cocky and kind of boastful. But I don't know if I've ever seen him as a heel who's just like mean or like cruel or vindictive. And that idea kind of appeals to me, because really, who are the top heels in ROH at the moment? Matt Taven is probably the top guy. I don't consider any of the Bullet Club guys heels.
It's Skrull, yeah.
Skrull and Cody could play the part some weeks, but overall, the fans love them.
Yeah, it's hard to really classify them as heels anymore. They're just they're too over. They're tweeners. They're operating heel characteristic of like very, very well loved characters now, which is just not the same thing.
So in terms of like singles heels, you know, putting aside the Briscoes and people like that, who are we looking at? Matt Taven, Bully Ray. Punishment Martinez, Silas Young, Shane Taylor. Few of those guys are like, Bully Ray's not going to be headlining a pay-per-view at this point. Neither is Shane Taylor without some significant build.
Yeah, so that leaves us with, I mean, obviously Punishment has some attention there, has some weight there, given that he has the TV title and he's gotten the push in recent months.
But the fact that he has the TV title means he's probably not going to be challenging for the world title.
That's for real. So, like, that doesn't leave a whole lot. Doesn't leave a whole lot of people to play with in that heel territory. King could honestly, he could turn heel and do it very credibly, and it would work. It could work for his character, because you're right. Like, he's done that kind of ostentatious, like, showboating style before, and that plays very easily into, like, it's so easy to turn a face into a heel when that face is, like, a little bit flamboyant, you know, a little bit flashy, a guy who kind of, like, takes a lot of pride in his swagger and takes a lot of pride in his presentation. That's very, you know, that's a very easy thing to spin into a heel trait.
For sure. And why not capitalize on Bachelor in Paradise when, you know, if he's getting increased attention on people's eyes, you should definitely use that. ROH should use that. They should put him front and center and make do something with him while people know his face. People, non-wrestling fans, know his face.
I mean, maybe on Bachelor in Paradise, it's important for his wrestling persona to remain pure and heroic. I don't know. Maybe it hurts him at his romantic prospects.
Oh, everything that pop culture has taught me is that ladies love a bad boy.
I suppose so. The only season of Bachelorette I've ever watched was the season that Kenny was on, and it was prior to coming back to ROH. So it just happenstance. I happen to have seen Kenny in his full romance mode, and he definitely plays up his face qualities. He's definitely a good guy.
Here's one last thing on this topic. Next ROH pay-per-view is Death Before Dishonor, September 28th, in Kenny King's hometown of Las Vegas, Nevada.
Okay, so what are we thinking what is Kenny by then in his hometown?
More stuff to mull over as we're still 2 months away from there. There's so much can change in that time.
But how interesting to have this conversation about Kenny King in the midst of this six-man match that isn't really about King. Like, Aries on commentary serves to direct the attention to King, and that's very effective. But this match on its own is not about King.
Is it about the kingdom? Because it was just more of the same from them.
Well,
they pop a balloon in the ear, and then they get the win.
Yeah, although as far as a kingdom win goes, it was cleaner than most, right?
I guess, yeah. It's just, here's the thing for me. On the same show as this, we got a reminder of past January when Joe Koff told Daniels and Kazarian, "You're being fired at the end of the year. I'm not renewing your contracts. I'm sick of everything that you're up to. I'm not putting up with it anymore." And now here we stand 6 months later. I don't remember what Daniels and Kaz did last fall that was so vehement and so awful that he told them, "You're done with this company." Because by comparison, it seems like everything Bully Ray has done, attacking people with chains, beating up referees, everything the kingdom's done with axes and baseball bats and low blows and balloons, and none of this stuff is being punished. The kingdom do this stuff every week and nothing's being done about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's confusing logic for me because I'm not actually sure what Bully Ray's, like, legal standing is in ROH anymore. He was fired. Like, Joe Koff fired him. So, but he's there to wrestle, so he's not fired. I think we've had this conversation before where it's like, you know, he was fired from one gig without, like, any kind of consequences on his ability to, like, appear in ring and wail on guys and, like, you know, get, you know, and not do so in a surprise fashion even, but, like, actually be on the card and be listed. And so he's still has a job in one capacity or another. And of course, the kingdom still have jobs. I mean, Matt Taven, you know, in kayfabe, obviously, but, like, Matt Taven comes to a match that he's supposed to wrestle and doesn't wrestle. He refuses to wrestle and sends in one of his goons instead.
Yeah, that's the thing. So how long, like, it's kind of making a mockery of Koff and of ROH management in general. It seems like the only people willing to stand up for what's right and actually try to do something about these guys just pulling their same nonsense week after week are what, Cheeseburger and Colt Cabana? They're the only two guys who are willing to actually, like, try to stop them?
Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, whatever's happening with SEU, like, they are facing the consequences, and we're getting, you know, some form of accountability from these guys now looking to, like, right these wrongs and, like, try and make themselves pure and beloved back in the hearts of the fans so that they're indispensable. It's very weird that, like, one storyline about people being, you know, fired or whatever ends up with their fellow performers having to take the rules into their own hands. And the other one is just like a very simple, like, okay, our boss has threatened our position, so we have to come back for that.
Yeah. So what did you think of SoCal Censor had a long FOMO this week, but long by ROH standards. We rarely get anything this long, but I thought it was good. Not a reset, but a good sort of reestablishing of where things stand, because literally Koff gave Daniels and Kaz the ultimatum on January 14th television. So over 6.5 months ago. It's good to kind of remind us of what happened. Their final battle in December is their last match for ROH, unless they come up with something. Unless they convince management that they can't afford to lose them. Unless they can win the tag titles and kind of hold the titles hostage, say you can't fire us, we're the champions. Something like that. So I like that. I liked that we also finally got clarification this week. Scorpio Sky, who wasn't involved in this original segment back in January, but he said wherever Daniels and Kaz go, that he's going with them. So if they're fired in December, he's out the door with them as well. I like that that's been confirmed now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm probably a bit of a mark for this, but I found this promo to be really effective. And it was direct in a way that I thought was meaningful and important and good for the story. And I like that we heard from all three guys. Daniels, of course, gets the bulk of the time, but we get like a very heartfelt metaphor from Kazarian, and we get very direct, affirmation of loyalty and attachment from Scorpio Sky. And I thought that it was a good promo, and it was a little longer by ROH standards, and I think that it benefited from being so, because it felt like very much like a reset for these characters to, like, you know, it was Daniels defining their next moves as like the pivotal point where they are trying to earn their spot back, to, you know, claim it back by earning it, and not to do so through hand-wringing or, you know, like begging, but to like show that they are needed and necessary for ROH, that they make ROH a stronger brand, which I don't think anyone, you know, in real non-storyline context, I don't think anyone could say that Christopher Daniels isn't like a crucial part of ROH. He is. So I like this. I like this a lot. I thought it was a keen way of addressing, of both like kind of giving homage to Christopher Daniels' work, like longtime work with ROH, while, you know, forcing the characters to kind of reset themselves and recenter themselves on a goal heading into the last 6 months of the year. I felt very similarly about this one as I did to like Jay Lethal's promo back in April, when he was talking about, you know, needing to do that ladder climb and like go back and revisit his failures so that he could like earn his shot at the title once again. And I think in that way, this is a similar thing for SEU.
Yeah. And it's so important. The reason that it was so successful for Lethal, I felt like, was you want your characters to have established goals and established hopes and dreams. That's what makes a character a strong character. So we know what SCU's objective is now. We know their mission statement. And now it's just a matter of watching them try to succeed or watch them fail in that attempt. But I don't know. I still feel like this is leading to Daniels and Kaz and maybe even Scorpio retiring at the end of this year.
I don't see it. I think that we're going to start seeing some, like, you know, we're going to see them make a concerted effort into getting the crowds behind them. I think I don't know if I would go as far as calling it a face turn, but I would say that they are definitely going to be And I think this is where things like BTE become really important, because I think BTE is playing a part in getting these guys a little bit more over even than they are in ROH in general, because we're getting to see them in the BTE context. And that does a world of good for their like fan interactions and for their profile when it comes to those who are already following that entity. So, yeah.
And the t-shirt sales.
Those all important t-shirt sales. So yeah, they've been on this, like on the various tours and on the various appearances, going in and like shitting on these cities where people are. But I think that they're going to continue doing that, but they're also going to be, continuing their run of delivering matches that the crowds want to see. And I wouldn't be surprised for them to fulfill the exact thing that Daniels is talking about right here, to, you know, re-earn that spot that they have.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see which of us is right this time. come end of December.
You have a better record than I do, so I really hope that I pull.
I will admit when I was wrong, and I had said going into the 6-man gauntlet, whichever team won was going to win the titles, and I was wrong.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's wrestling. You never know what's going to happen.
It all matters, and none of it matters.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Also on the show, we had another women's match. We had Oedo Tai versus Mayuri Ohtani and Jenny Rose in a Stardom special. Three women from Stardom, and Jenny has spent a lot of time over in Stardom as well. So yeah, this was another fun one. I am on the record as being a huge fan of Stardom. Seeing Kagetsu and Hana Kimura get to compete this week after Hazuki competed last week. Mayu, probably one of my favorite women wrestlers on the planet right now. So yeah, another great one. I was thinking during this match that in the women, we've seen a number of Women of Honor tag matches, especially on the Honor Club events the past few months, and the babyfaces almost always win. Sumi and Tennille, or Tennille and whoever Tennille is teaming with this month, they almost always win the tag matches. So I was generally a little surprised that Oedo Tai picked up the win here.
Yeah, I was a little bit too. But of course they were aided in that win by, you know, by the typical Oedo Tai shenanigan interference and cheating and things like that. But the difference being these women are practiced at doing these tricks in a way that makes sense, that are seamless, that have a note of grace about them, that, you know, really does like contrast with what we may see in like the cheating shenanigans elsewhere in ROH. So it doesn't bother me, because I think that they do it so seamlessly. It makes the win feel, if not earned, justified in some odd way.
It was funny though, because I was thinking, oh, the heels picked up the win here. That's leading somewhere, right? Like that mean that maybe champion versus champion Kagetsu and Sumi, or maybe Hazuki got a match at one point. Maybe Hana Kimura will get like a title shot against Sumi now. And then they immediately followed it up with an announcement that we're going to have a four-way number one contenders match in 2 weeks to determine Sumi's next challenger, and none of these women are involved.
Yeah.
So it did kind of undercut it, where I'm like, oh, well, then I don't know. I guess winning this, what does winning this match really mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
Does it have any rewards winning this match, or is it just?
Again, we had these women hanging out after Best in the World. It makes sense to give them more to do. This was the day after. So it's like, you know, I think that when we come down to it, some of this stuff is just a business decision, and like in spending money for talent to come in and do a high profile show, if you're going to be doing a TV taping the next day and you can, you know, double your exposure for that talent and get a little bit more use out of them, it makes sense to give them a match. And we've seen plenty of matches where there wasn't really anything online for New Japan guys to win, but they won basically virtually on the virtue of them being New Japan guys versus ROH guys. I feel like with Stardom, it's a little...
You mean like our opening contest?
Oh, well, it's, yeah, maybe that, you know. Exactly. No, exactly. We have two examples of this happening in one show. So I feel like Stardom is kind of taking on the Women of Honor's. They're becoming the New Japan for Women of Honor, which is obvious because, you know, that's been the start. That's kind of been how it's worked since ROH started this partnership with Stardom. So in the same way that New Japan guys are, they get their kind of priority wins. I think we're going to see more and more. We'll see Stardom women take those matches when there's not titles on the line.
We've been seeing a fair amount of Ueda Tai in Women of Honor this year, especially Kagetsu Kimura and Hazuki. And Mayu Iwatani's made a bunch of appearances. She was in the Women of Honor Championship Tournament. But in the same way that I feel like we see a lot of Los Ingobernables, especially Yvonne Sonata, I'd love to see some new Stardom women the next time they decide to bring someone over. As much as I love Kimura and Kagetsu, it'd be nice to see somebody new. We haven't really seen anyone from Queen's Quest over in Women of Honor. Or there's so many great women over there. Team Jungle and some other. I know you would probably be pretty on board with seeing Chris Wolf in Women of Honor.
Yes. I mean, Chris Wolf, I don't think she works consistently with Stardom anymore, but I would love to see Chris Wolf. I'm actually kind of sad that we're not seeing her on the Honor United tour since she works so often in the United Kingdom.
Again, we don't know the politics or the booking decisions behind this, why we see Evo and Sonata so much more than other members in the New Japan roster. But occasionally they'll shake things up. We saw Killer Elite Squad this year, which was a change of pace. Mm-hmm. And Kushida's return. We hadn't seen Kushida in a while before he came back to Best in the World and faced Jay Lethal. And then he reappeared. Before I move on to Kushida and Gresham, I almost forgot about something. We also had another return on this week's Ring of Honor. Mandy Leone appears for the first time in 3 months.
Yes.
Yeah, that was she was one of the people that, kind of like when Coast to Coast vanished and the Modem City Machine Guns vanished, where there was never any explanation. Nothing happened on television to explain why Mandy all of a sudden vanished, but a month passed, and then 2 months, and 3 months, and we hadn't seen her. And all of a sudden, here she is on commentary.
Yeah, wearing a fur coat in June.
I don't know what that wacky Virginia weather is like indoors.
It is not fur coat in June weather. I guarantee it.
Well, if Bernard can manage, Mandy can manage.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I did. She did offer a little bit of an explanation, which I'll take. I'll take any sort of explanation over no explanation. She kind of said that the reason we hadn't seen her in the past 3 months is she was just so upset and so embarrassed about not winning the Women of Honor tournament that she just needed to take some time away.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I like it too. And I, you know, I think that also offers like a handy explanation for lots of women that we haven't maybe seen in frequency since the tournament. So, no, I think it's credible.
And it gives a counter to what we were just talking about with the take match outcome. It provides a consequence. There's consequences to winning and losing matches. She lost a match and it had such an internal effect on her that she just couldn't even be on television or couldn't even be in the ring. She needed just to take a vacation.
Yeah, sure.
So I like that. I don't know, you know, will be another 3 months before we see her again? Will she be back in the next couple of weeks to wrestle? She's not advertised for the Honor Reunited Tour or any other dates, but maybe. I mean, we could use some more bodies in the Women of Honor division at the moment, I think.
We really could. I think the only downfall from this appearance is that there's not like a follow-up to it. There's no like, it's kind of a non sequitur in that way. Like, it's cool to see her and I would like to, you know, see her in ring, but we're not getting the promise of like, oh, we're going to see her in a few weeks. And that to me is a typical way of setting up a commentary that like, And it wouldn't bother me so much, but this was also the same episode that we got Austin Aries on commentary in kind of a random spot as well. Yeah, I mean, Austin Aries had a little bit more attachment to the storyline in his commentary role. Mandy's kind of just there. It's just in one episode, we got two different guest commentators who don't have upcoming matches with ROH to like kind of, you know, tie them to the proceedings.
Yeah, and I will say that the Women of Honor have been putting on some pretty great matches lately. But the one big negative for me is there aren't really any stories to any of these matches. Since Sumi and Jenny Rose wrapped up their little story, and Deonna and Kelly Klein put an end to their long, long rivalry, have there been any sort of feuds or stories in the women's division?
No, not as far as I can tell.
Sumi gets like a Challenger of the Month sort of treatment, and then that's about it. Tennille is just, she shows up for events and gets booked in tag matches and stuff, but I don't think she's had a single feud since joining the company.
Yeah, I think that they were trying to work on something between her and Kelly. It hasn't really come to fruition yet.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it'll come to head in the four-way match in a couple of weeks. They'll take each other out of the match, and that'll lead to something long-term with them. But yeah, like you were saying, Mandy on commentary, they could have easily had her maybe make a dismissive comment about Jenny Rose taking the pin here, or about how Jenny can't hang with the Japanese women, and set up a match in the future between Mandy and Jenny.
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
Yeah. Again, it's like, why do we have this if it's not going to do something for the story, for the women who are in the ring? Obviously, we don't get to keep the Stardom women in ROH all the time. Like, they're not Women of Honor. They're visitors. They're guests. So that makes it even more crucial to, like, use your in-house talent, especially if it's in a commentating role, in a way that is meaningful. And while I appreciated seeing Mandy, and I appreciated them giving, like, her having some kind of reason for not having been around the last couple of months, it's just a wasted opportunity to, like, develop some kind of, like, seed of storyline that can pay off down the line. They're not looking at payoffs, and that's really bothering me. It's starting to become really apparent that they're not thinking ahead.
The university English major in me is remembering when it was hammered into us that if you're writing a book, if you're whatever, every scene must be important. Every scene has to be, if you took this scene out, the rest of this would fall apart, things wouldn't make sense, stuff like that. And I don't know, this isn't being written this way. If this match hadn't appeared on this week's TV, everything would have been business as usual, right? We wouldn't have felt like we were missing something. Like, we wouldn't have, like, the next time Jenny showed up, we wouldn't have been like, wait, what? Why is Jenny like this? Or, you know, why is Oedo Tai all of a sudden, like, being given title shots? We wouldn't be missing anything. It was here and it was fun. But don't you need more than that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for having the occasional non-sequitur match. I'm all for having things that are kind of just like there for a good time or there for a good match, and they don't have to serve a long-running importance or like build anything substantial from it. I'm cool with that, and I'm here for it on occasion. My problem is we're not getting out of that mentality with Women of Honor. There's still very much the treatment of Women of Honor that, like, it's a match by match situation, and we're kind of figuring it out as we go. And I thought we were getting away from that by, you know, having a title, having a Women of Honor tournament to determine a title winner, to, you know, having a title for people to fight over and for storylines to build around. And we really haven't seen them dedicate energy to that, which is a shame because they so easily could. They now have a really classic foundation to work from that'll work in any number of storylines, but they have to start committing to them. Otherwise, it just comes off a little sloppy.
Yeah, I mean, you compare that to, say, Jonathan Gresham.
Mm-hmm.
He lost. He came out. He had a match against a Japanese talent, a guest star. He lost. This happens to Gresham a lot. He gets kind of a high-profile match. Comes out on the losing end. But it definitely feels to me like this is part of something. This is the Jonathan Gresham story. Like, I came away from this match feeling, even though he lost, this match was about him more than it was about Kushida. This is about Gresham going back and forth. He picks up some strong wins, and then he picks up, then he'll his pattern this year seems to be he'll get a really strong win in like a big spot, and then he'll lose the next match. But I don't think it's 50-50 booking. I don't think it's just, oh, we don't know what to do with him. It seems to be his character arc.
Yeah, I think that they have discovered that no matter what, Gresham is a very watchable wrestler. And whether win or lose, he's a guy that you remember in a match. You remember him in this match just as much as you remember Kushida. It does not really matter at the end of the day. And because what's kind of fun with Gresham right now is that the stakes are low in a way that makes his matches exciting, because truly anyone could win. He doesn't have a title and he's not doing a whole lot of title shots. So it's, you know, it's basically like when you get to see a Gresham match, you could very well see him pull out a win against somebody who has a, you know, a higher stature than he does, or is much bigger than he is. It was, you know, if he had beat Kushida in this match, it would have been an entirely credible win and would have felt entirely justified in having him win that match. That's kind of the fun point that he's at, where he's got a lot of talent. He's starting to develop a following. He's starting to develop like a good realm of audience support. And so now we get to see him like really shine regardless, win or lose.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
So then, let me ask you this. What do you think of Jonathan Gresham basically just buying Daniel Bryan's old ring gear? He came out in full American Dragon Jonathan Gresham gear this week.
Yes, yes.
Red trunks, red boots, and the same robe that Bryan Danielson wore for the first couple of years there in ROH.
I believe he was also wearing that robe at the most recent house show. And so he's clearly starting to take on that aesthetic. I'm curious. My interest is piqued here. I'm interested to know what you think it means.
He's been getting a lot of Daniel Bryan comparisons this year, which makes sense. Their styles, this meticulous, slow counters and submissions and transitions and one thing into another sort of style. Obviously, it right away, it makes you think of Bryan, especially Bryan during his time in ROH. And it's so unlike anybody else on the ROH roster right now. Who's the closest person on the roster with this kind of style?
I mean, I don't...
Marty Scurll kind of has a couple of things like this, but no, not anywhere close.
No, Gresham is as close as it gets.
Yeah, he's totally unique, Gresham style. Unique to the ROH roster right now.
Yeah.
But very reminiscent of Bryan and the way Bryan used to wrestle. And so I don't know. I'm on the fence about them leaning into that so much. It's one thing to be like, he reminds me of a young Daniel Bryan. It's another to be like, oh, now he's dressing like a young Daniel Bryan. And I felt like he even had more stubble this week than usual. So if he comes out with like a long goat beard, I don't know.
I'm not sure we'll see that anytime soon. I appreciate the tribute to Bryan, if that is an intentional thing, which I'm going to guess that it most certainly is. And I think it's kind of it's both a nod to the past of ROH, but also, you know, Gresham making a declaration of himself as like a future big name and of this company, a future big name of wrestling. And I think that that's a really bold idea. And I'm not opposed to it. I'm kind of a fan of that type of bold movement for Gresham at this point. Again, he's in this fun position where, like, he doesn't have a title to defend. He's starting to get a lot more attention. His matches are always solid, if not outright good. And so, I mean, this is the time to start making those kind of bold moves, even if that bold move is just to, you know, pay tribute to someone who is so important to ROH's past. It's Gresham's way of saying, you know, I am reflective of the past because I'm also reflective of the best aspects of the future for this company. And I think that that's, I actually think that's kind of brilliant.
I want to say it was about 15 years ago, I saw Pearl Jam in concert and Eddie Vedder was wearing a Ramones shirt. So yeah, I kind of, maybe it's kind of like that, right? Like paying homage to your idol by kind of dressing like them a little, or by like wearing something that's a tribute to them, but it's not a ripoff. He's not coming out and doing Brian's finishing moves or, you know, trying to wrestle exactly like him. There's somebody, minor spoiler alert, there's somebody debuting for ROH in the next month or so that kind of reminds me of a young Samoa Joe at times.
Right. I think that there's some place setting happening in ROH where they're trying to build their brand based off of like the exciting new wave of guys that may have, you know, maybe reflective of the past, the best aspects of ROH's past. That's not a bad thing. That's actually, that's a really smart thing to do. We've seen WWE do that. Definitely. We've seen New Japan do that. Companies that acknowledge like where their success has come from, oftentimes look to new talent that is reflective in some way or another of that past talent. And for ROH to do that, that's really good because they're looking at, you know, if not this year, soonish, probably losing some of their big name brand guys to the Fed. So they're, you know, they're going to need to have those guys that remind audiences of the best of the best case scenario, the best of the best from ROH.
If this was Mexico, he would be coming out literally billed as Danielson
Keith. Yes.
And wrestling in the same mask, or, you know, coming out as El Hijo del Danielson, De Danielson, or something, you know, son of Danielson sort of thing. So,
exactly.
I kind of like it and I'm intrigued. And hey, if Mr. Dan O'Brien chooses not to re-sign with WWE in September, and maybe decides to return to ROH and New Japan and do the kind of Cody thing, there's a dream match.
Yeah, absolutely. I still am not holding out any hope for that, but...
Are you afraid of change?
No.
You think Danielson and Kaz are never going to retire? The Young Bucks are staying in ROH?
No, I didn't.
Brian's staying in WWE.
I feel like I'm stuck in all the wrong ways and all the right ways, and I'm just jaded. And no, it's not that I don't want things to change. I accept that change is inevitable and change happens. And it's not that I don't. I would like the Bucks to stick around in ROH and New Japan, actually, most definitely. But like, I am also realistic about certain aspects of it. And I'm realistic that like, we are going to see people leave. We are going to see people stay. We're going to see people not come back. And I think in the case of Daniel Bryan, I think that like, for Daniel Bryan, he came back to WWE after seemingly retiring from wrestling because of, you know, enormous injuries. For him to not continue with WWE after like a miraculous return seems to me a little, would seem to be an odd movement in a story that is supposed to be about like a giant recovery. For him to come back and then to only leave WWE a couple months later seems kind of odd.
But there was a sort of a strong vibe that the only reason WWE cleared him to wrestle again was because they knew if they didn't, he was definitely leaving.
Yeah.
And going to go wrestle for someone else.
Yeah.
So it kind of seemed like, you know, Vince has that thing of like, I want all the money.
Yeah. No, like, you're mine.
He's friends with Trump. So you
yeah, exactly. And no, that makes perfect sense. And that's absolutely real. As far as I can tell, the like, you know, we have to bring you back. We have to let you come back. You've got to come back to us. Cause we're not going to let anyone else have you. I just feel like that's, you know, the lure of that, the containment of that is probably still for Brian to come back from WWE to continue wrestling, but not with WWE, to me is not realistic at this point in time. I think that he will stick with that company for a little while longer.
The people who leave WWE and go to the indies and become a big thing are people who are being really misused and mismanaged in WWE. People like Juice Robinson, Drew McIntyre, Ethan Carter III, people like that, more rather than like the top
big names.
When the big names quit, like Punk, like Cody, that's rare.
Yeah. I think that's what I'm trying to get at, is that like Brian is not really being misused in any like specific way by WWE right now. Like, people might have quibbles with like what they're doing with him, or like they might be underwhelmed with what he's been doing since he came back, but like, we can't say that he's being treated unfairly by this company. Like, he's a top guy. He was brought back, like his return was heralded by the company. Like, they're very proud and to like, you know, have Brian on the roster. Whereas like Juice Robinson is a really good example of a guy who, you know, has benefited enormously from being in a company that was not WWE, to the laughable extent now where I think I just saw an article that was like,
yeah, they want,
that they want him back. And it's like, that's great. But, and people are like quick to be like, oh, WWE, they're going to sign Juice Robinson again. And it's like, what's in it for Juice Robinson at this point? Like, he has to go back to WWE. Does he go back to be CJ Parker? Like, does he go back to playing a character that he no longer is and no longer identifies with, and like and leaving behind a title holding character in New Japan, where he's getting to like main event matches against the current like heavyweight champion of the company? Like, what does it matter if WWE wants him back? Like, I think we have to stop acting like the minute WWE comes calling, they're the only ones who count, especially when we're comparing it to New Japan, who, like, yes, New Japan is a foreign company there in Japan, but they're under a rapid and huge market expansion right now that is largely happening in the Western world. And they are also, they're able to pay. Like, people always kind of want to come back to the enormous amount of money that WWE can hand somebody. New Japan pro wrestling can pay well. They're not hurting for that.
Yeah, but they pay in yen. What am I supposed to do with yen?
You can exchange it, Harley. I've told you this a million times.
Last thing on the show this week, new world champion Jay Lethal. We had some backstage thoughts on him right coming through the curtain after winning the title. He was understandably fired up, and this was like a classic old school wrestling promo, which I enjoyed. He's the champion. He's the new champion. He's really excited. He says that his championship is the most important one on the planet. He's the best wrestler on the planet, and that nobody can touch him. Come and get it, boys. And I like that. It didn't come across as arrogant or full of himself to me. And that's, whether you're babyface or a heel, if you're the top champion in your promotion, you should believe that the title you're holding is the most important title in all of wrestling. You should believe that I got this gold now. That makes me the best wrestler on the planet.
Yeah, like he says in the promo, like, the title doesn't make the wrestler makes the title. And that has held true for so many titles and their importance. When we think of these titles, we don't think of them just simply as like, oh, well, this is this promotion's top title, so it means something. We think about all the guys who inhabited that title. We think of the guys who carried that, who won that, who had like long-standing reigns with that belt around them. So yeah, and like you said, this is very like classic wrestling promo, like champion promo style. And very befitting of this moment in time for Jay Lethal, who had just come back from, you know, this like 2-year struggle to get that belt back onto his, you know, back onto his waist, back onto his shoulder, back onto him.
And he said, there'll probably be a line of people right around the corner coming after me. And there should be. That's how it should be in the company. I always hate when some promotions do it where it's like only the champion's out in the ring and says, if anybody wants to fight me, come on out and fight me. And only one person shows up. And so, why doesn't every single person in the locker room want that title, want that shot in the ring, a match against the champion? So, We'll see. The question just remains as to who's first.
Yeah.
Who's the first person to step up to Lethal? I still want to say it's Matt Taven, but maybe we'll get somebody else first.
I wonder, because I sure hope it's Taven, because, you know, he's not fighting matches until he can, like, get certified his title win here. So I'm gonna say that it's Taven most assuredly, like, first and foremost, given that his whole thing now is that he is actually the winner of this title and that he got the pin on Castle and he's carrying around something in a bag. Like, you know, he's got to get a shot and he's got to get it soon.
So I don't know what's going to happen on TV, but August 16th to 19th, ROH is heading back to the UK for Honor Reunited. Got a lot of matches happening there. The International Cup is happening for the first time. And Lethal is going to be in competition at least twice. August 18th in Doncaster, Jay Lethal and either Jonathan Gresham or Mark Haskins, depending on how the International Cup plays out. But Lethal's going to be teaming up with either Haskins or Gresham to take on the Young Bucks. Interesting matchup. And then August 19th in London, Lethal is defending the title against whomever wins the International Cup. Whoever wins the tournament gets a shot against Lethal. And lots of opportunities there. Gresham, Daniels, Jimmy Havoc, Joe Hendry. It'll be an interesting 3 days for sure. Next week on television, 3 matches announced. We've got Marty Scurll against Shane Hurricane Helms in Helms's chance to avenge his broken finger.
Probably to get another one to go with it.
Yep. We've got Silas Young versus Chris Sabin in a number one contender to the TV title match. That's kind of weird because Sabin hasn't won a singles match in ROH in, I don't know, not this year.
But I mean,
and he's facing the former champion.
Yes, but this timing is astute, given that now we know what we didn't know a couple weeks back, which is that Alex Shelley is retiring from wrestling, and so.
Yes, that'll probably be next week on next week's TV. I think he'll make the official.
That'll be the official announcement. But the word got out around social media last week with lots of people, you know, thanking Alex Shelley for all the great things that he's done in wrestling, and of course Chris Sabin acknowledging like the importance of Motor City Machine Guns, and so many people saying great things about the tag team and about Shelley himself. So this timing for Chris Sabin in this number one contenders match for the TV title, this is well suited for Sabin to give him a singles push if this is what, you know, what they want to do with him, his time in ROH right now. And after watching him and the Best of Super Juniors tournament, I'm totally okay with that. Let's see some more singles action from Chris Sabin.
Change is inevitable, whether you like it or not.
I'm in support of this change.
You're in support of Alex Shelley retiring?
No, of course not. But I am in support of him pursuing his career in physical therapy. Shout out to all the PTs out there. Good job, everybody.
Maybe him and Davey Richards can open a clinic together.
Exactly.
And then also on next week's television, main event, triple threat trios match, SoCal Uncensored versus LIJ versus Bullet Club. It's the return of the Bullet Club versus LIJ multi-man TV main event. It's been like a couple weeks since we've had one of these.
Hey, you know, it almost feels like there's actually, you know, been a sizable amount of time since our last one, so I'm almost ready for it again.
All right, who's pinning Bushi this time?
Hey, we could see some SoCal Uncensored standout action here. So it could be Christopher Daniels gets the pin on Bushi.
Or, to make up for getting pinned by Eli Isom.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Eli, let it not be 6 months before we see you again.
Eli's going to be, he's off wrestling Josh Woods on ROH Superstars, the Saturday morning show.
ROH's Future Prospect Island.
Yes, on YouTube, which is, I don't know if that's a death knell or if it's a good thing. Kids, they don't own TV sets. They watch everything on YouTube. So,
I mean, look, it's worked wonders for being the elite.
There you go. Maybe Maybe Iceland's got this huge tween fan base who have never heard of Jay Lethal before.
Guys, I mean, come on, tweens. Tweens out there, if you're listening, and I know you are, you gotta dig on this Eli Isom character. He is quite the dreamboat, to use your language that you haven't used since 1955.
Yes, so that's it for our show this week. I'm on Twitter at Talking Honor.
And I'm on Twitter at ForkedPGH. That's ForkedPGH.
I know you tweens only use Instagram these days, but you can dial up your AOL modem, send your emails to TalkingHonor@gmail.com. Let us know if you've heard of Jay Lethal. Let us know what you think of Kieran Q in the Mae Young Classic, of Kenny King potentially turning heel. If Jonathan Gresham is the new Brian Danielson, who's the new CM Punk?
Ooh.
And who you think is going to be the first to step up to new world champion Jason Lethal. You can send us your emails there. We'll read them on this show. And we'll be back next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. No!